In the spirit of failure, I always think of a do you even fail question. I ran this one past them. I don't know how like solid this question is. It might be kind of a weak one, but I had tried to play into your world a little bit, and then I'm in Dell, so I just like thought about the worst scenario someone who's working with Dell could do. So option one, you have a team that you're running, obviously in IT, and I'm going to not articulate this well because I know the lingo good enough. You're updating the servers. You're working on them, right? Yeah. And you nuke them, and everything is gone. No backup, nothing. It is gone. And you got to deal with the repercussions of that. Option two, you personally successfully do something on your laptop that you shouldn't. Malware gets in, nukes your servers. Yeah. Which option are you choosing and why?
Well, at my level, I'd rather have the one that's just mine.
Okay.
I'll take accountability for that. I mean, I think... you know, the bigger team failures, obviously, like there's a lot of good that comes out of them, from teams rallying to fix problems. And some of the biggest challenges I've had to deal with in my career were around failures like that, where a bad piece of code gets in and, you know, you're down or something breaks, and when the team kind of rallies around that, that's pretty fun to come out of. But I'd rather not have the experiences where a bunch of stuff is going bad. Yeah. I'll take the accountability for doing something stupid on my computer.
Interesting. So he called it that you would pick the independent one.
Yeah.
He's like, all day. He goes, I think, because the first option, we're both independent. And he goes, no, he goes, if I know someone at his level, he's going to choose independent. And he goes, so you should pick a team one and an independent one. And he did. So interestingly enough, but well, you all have tuned into the Do You Even Fail podcast. I definitely wouldn't want to nuke a server though. So we'll leave that off the table for night, unless you've done that. Maybe you have. I didn't think so. But we're on with Benji. Super excited. Unique background from sports to IT to now fractional, owning your own firm. But I won't articulate it as well as Benji, so go ahead and introduce yourself to the audience a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, well, thanks for having me. Yeah. I'm excited to talk about failure. I think I'm a pro at it sometimes, but grew up here in the southwest suburbs and decided not to go very far from home. I ended up playing, like I was mentioning, I played amateur baseball in Chaska for 15 years, which had a bunch of failures and built into that too. And, eventually success. And so wanted to stay in this community and, raise my family here. I've got three kids. My oldest is a sophomore at North Dakota. And then I've got a junior daughter at Chan High School and then a seventh grade boy. And, they're very active in sports. And so I end up, I coach both my girls in hockey all the way up and, then coach my son in baseball still. So that's what keeps me going, and it's a great way to kind of give back to the community and share things that I've learned along the way with my kids, and even though they don't like being coached by me, but and other kids. So
yeah. I was gonna say, are we hearing a future college hockey coach here, or what are we dabbling in?
No, I don't think so. My brother, he played professional baseball, and he just he coached his son all the way up, and his son's now going to play D1 baseball in Nebraska, and he's coaching a high school baseball team. And so he's consumed with that, and I don't think I have that in my future, but yeah.
Yeah, but he enjoyed on the side.
You know?
Good bonding time with the family too. But so before we get into talking about the failures that kind of made you who you are, I was talking to Emmett earlier, and I was thinking about failure, and I was trying to decide. I told Emmett, I said, if you don't compare yourself to anyone around you, how do you measure failure then?
Hmm.
So I'd be curious what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, you know, I'm pretty self-motivated. And so oftentimes the bar that I have set for myself is far higher than what anyone else is doing around. I think, you know, it's pretty easy to compare yourself to someone. And my failures are really on my own expectations of myself, and more often than not. And And then, you know, I think it's the other piece of it is where, you know, those relationships where you kind of, you let those down and, you know, you can kind of see that, maybe I didn't have the right conversation with my daughter on this or that, or maybe I was too hard on my son in a sport. And, you know, those, my expectations are, you know, creating a great environment and helping them grow. And so parenting, I think, is one of those things where, like, it's a daily experience of failure.
Yeah. I'm 100% with you. I'm a big, I push myself, and there's areas, I think we all have areas in our lives where we naturally compare ourselves to others. Those are more out of an insecurity rather than a motivator. But what I can't help think about, I'm like, man, if we really think about the art of failure and failing, even if we only compete against ourselves, that was, our goal was still created by looking at external factors, right? I'm like, I wonder how people looked at failure 1,000 years ago, or when there was maybe a lot less comparison possible to create that measuring or to create that goal. And that's where I think no matter what, we all subconsciously are competing with others in our head a little bit. At least yeah. How we create that end result.
Yeah. I don't know. For me, maybe it's maybe seeing other people is more about motivation than it is about comparing. Like I worked out at Orange Theory. You can't tell right now that I've worked out at Orange Theory. I've failed on that. But, you know, they've got the big board up with the different measures and, you know, so you can see how many splat points did I get and those type of things. And, like, I didn't really – I guess there was an element of wanting to compete in that just naturally. But it was more of a competition of myself, like, oh, can I get to the top of this?
So,
I think there's some, you know, obviously external influence that happens. I don't know how you'd get around that.
Right. But, exactly. Yeah. Standards are created by looking at norms around you, I think. And then measuring the differences, I think healthy comparison is where you're going, hey, I like how I feel when I am at that state that person's in. Let's use his motivation to get there. But so in your life, you've already mentioned a lot of, you've talked about kind of a fitness road bump, baseball, family. I'm sure you have some in IT. Where do we want to start? What's the first gift we're going to unwrap of failure in your life?
I think the one that sports have been such a big part of my life. And, you know, I think some of the early failures that I had in sports were instrumental in a lot of ways where out of it came a work ethic, and it's just this desire to be the best that I could be. So I obviously started before by high school, but that was kind of where that big point was, where I was a good baseball player and had played on a state team, and then I came back to my high school team, and we were one of the top teams in the state. And as a sophomore, I didn't make the varsity, and I'm like, okay, I failed to make that. And then I my junior year, I make the varsity team, and our basketball team went to state. And so the first couple of games, they weren't ready to play, and so I started. I won the first pitched and won the first two games, and then they all came back, and I wasn't contributing after that. And so there was, you know, that wasn't like a kind of a blatant failure. It was more of a failure of like, I didn't get to the goal I wanted to get. I didn't accomplish that. And, so then I'm like, all right, I'm going to buckle down. And I mean, back then there wasn't off season sports, and there wasn't, it wasn't 24/7, 365. And so I think I was one of the first people that played fall baseball. And then I worked out the entire winter at one of the facilities that are now ubiquitous. And I just kind of kept grinding and grinding. And, you know, that continued into college where, I could have went and played a couple of places, and I decided I wanted to go to St. Cloud. Didn't get recruited there. Didn't make the team my freshman year. I'm like, okay, you know, I thought I should make it. Made it my sophomore year, and then I'm like, and then I didn't make it my the next year. And so just a lot of failures in there that were like, okay, I've got to, if I want something, I'm going to have to work for it. And
So why did you want to go to St. So you had schools that recruited you. I just want to make sure I understood it correctly. You're like, nah, I'm going here. Why? Talk to us through that decision.
Yeah, you know, I don't even remember the reason why. Then I think you know, one was Bemidji, and another was a couple of junior colleges in Division III. And I'm like, I don't know, I want to play at Division II level. I think is probably the biggest driver.
So what do you think changed? So you got single state, you didn't make it year one, you made it year two. What did you do different, or would you say just the team dynamics changed? They needed someone like you.
Yeah, I would say the team dynamics changed. You know, I was probably better my freshman year than I was my the next year. But yeah.
So talk me through that, because I think about kind of a similar example, but opposite. My wife in the music side, right? They always say in music, if there's already a voice like you, they don't need you, right? No matter how good you are, if you sound the same as someone else and you pick up a microphone and you don't have a unique voice, you're not going to be selected. It's just kind of kaputs, game over, right? So in your shoes, I mean, that would be really hard for me to go, hey, I'm good enough to be here, but you just don't need someone in that position. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that was hard. I mean, you know, sports are one of those things where, like, you look at the guys that get drafted, and they're, you know, the measurements are, well, they get the draft is this week, right? And they're going to measure how big is their hand, and, you know, all of these things that, I don't know, in my opinion, they're interesting, but it's more about what's inside someone that, that I'm interested in, and that I think are more determinants of kind of success and growth than it is, you know, just purely the things that you're gifted with physically, right? So I think, you know, I think I had to come to terms with that, you know, I just didn't have those other intangibles, the things that there weren't things that I couldn't get taller, I could get stronger, and I could do those things. But yeah, so it was hard, but I think it was a normal life lesson too.
Okay. So why do you think, I mean, you can't help but notice, right? It's like, hey, throughout baseball, it's like, hey, I'm good, but I'm not quite great, right? And so you're still like, but I'm just going to keep chasing it anyways. And then you continue to chase it after college, and you played, you know, additional ball further along. What do you think was really motivating you and pushing you? Were you trying to prove something? Was it, you know, trying to find your place? Was your identity inside of it?
Yeah, I think my identity was certainly in baseball. I mean, it had been something that since I was a tiny kid, that I was good at and I enjoyed. And, you know, I do remember, I mean, I must have been 30 at the time. So the Chasco still has a great tradition of town ball baseball, and we were terrible my first few years, and it was all buddies that I had kind of grown up playing with, and, you know, a lot of college baseball players, and we're like, we want to return this program to good standing, so there was some motivation in that was certainly there, and some pride. I mean, I had bat boyed for the team when I was in fourth grade, you know, it got to a point where we ended up making the state tournament and then getting second in state. And so then there was that kind of drive of like, okay, we're really close to getting to that accomplishment that we wanted. And so that was motivating probably for 3 or 4 years. And then we kept making the state tournament, and we kept making runs but didn't end up winning it. And, after a while, it was like, I remember when we made the state tournament, I broke down. I'm like, this was, like, it had become so stressful to try to continue to achieve that. And so some of the joy from it kind of went away. But, yeah, I don't know. It's always been a pretty big piece of my life.
So how did you come to terms with stepping away?
Well, I'm probably not very well. So we all left and went and played over 35 baseball for a couple of years. We end up winning state tournaments and that, which was a lot of fun. Then I think at that point it was just my son was starting to get involved, and, I'm like, all right, I can walk away from that competition and, But it certainly was an identity piece too. Yeah.
Yeah, I think about it. I mean, is your brother older than you or younger?
Younger.
He's younger than you. Okay, interesting. Because I think about me and my brother. How close are you and your brother, actually?
In age?
Yeah. 4 years. 4 years. So decently close. Not like drastically, but because my brother and I were, so we were under 2 years apart. And so the amount of competition was just unreal, right? And I was always I was always chasing to be better than him at what he was doing, or he was chasing being frustrated, like, hey, the younger brother's better than me here, right? And it was just the constant game of leapfrog in life, right? Was that hard? I mean, for me, it'd be hard going, hey, my younger brother just, wow, you went pro, cool. Like, you know, kind of a pill to swallow, like, that hurt a little bit. I mean, is that?
Yeah, you know, no. I think I always had really, I remember, so our neighborhood, like it was back in the day, right? I just make yourself sound really old. We just move around neighborhoods and play sports. That's all we did. And, my brother got drug along. And, so, I mean, we were playing football in the backyard, and, one guy went and played football at Harvard. Another one played football at North Dakota or Notre Dame. Another one, played football at Gustavus. And, like, so he just, like, he didn't have a choice. He, we would yell at him because we needed a fourth player or sixth player. And so from when he made it, it was, you know, I was super proud of it. Yeah. And knowing that, like, I contributed because I brought him along. And there was enough distance where, like, we weren't in high school at the same time. We weren't in college at the same time. And so there was, and that was, I would say once I moved out of the house is when our relationship really started, and we kind of didn't like each other for a lot of years.
Yeah, I can relate to it. So you've been coaching since day one is what I'm picking up on, right? But that was really, me and my brother didn't get close, I'd say, until even partway through college, because we were close enough and we went to the same college. But it was always just this weird dynamic where a lot of things came naturally to me, but he also, and it didn't come naturally to him, but it made him a really good coach, right? Because he took the time to be really analytical about, we ended up getting huge into lifting. And so I went into powerlifting, and then I did bodybuilding, and significant amount of coaching from him on dieting and routines and stuff. And a lot of people are like, man, you do a lot of research. I'm like, no, not really. Like, I got a guy. He knows everything. It just comes naturally to me. So I get a lot of it from him. I was a lot of like, hey, I just get to enjoy, you know, watching me succeed because of his coaching. I couldn't get there without it. But I think about the amount of coaching you've done, having a daughter go to, you know, play D1 hockey, having your own baseball experience, your brothers. You have to have seen some pretty like catastrophic in the moment failures for younger people who feel like it is the end of the world, right? Mine personally, I think about state swim. I was a sophomore. I got to be on the relay. Everyone else is seniors. I'm like, this is unreal. It was my only second year ever swimming because our school is horrible at all other sports. So I was like, let's swim, right? Like, travel basketball and baseball. I'm going to go swim too. And I was a backstroker off the blocks. I'm going down. I don't know how much you know about swim, but I get to the flags. I'm counting my strokes, and then you turn over and do a flip turn. Well, apparently I found some weird ultra speed, and my stroke count was actually supposed to be two less with how fast I was swimming, but I was using my usual stroke count. Turned over, the walls right here, I flip. My thighs and feet smash on top of the pool deck, right? And I push off, and I get back, and I get up, and I get out of the pool. I watch the race, and we literally lose by the equation of, like, what I messed up in the race, right? And so I go to the locker room just – I bawled my eyes out. Not gonna hide. Like, I thought the world was over, right? And my dad came down to the locker room and talked to me about it, and so did some other people. But in that moment, there, it's like that. Yeah. This is catastrophic. Like, I am a loser. What? I mean,
yeah. You know, the thing that sticks out to me. But this was, I don't know, probably in the last 4 or 5 years. My daughter was playing in a tournament up in Blaine, and I wasn't coaching. It must have been like a fall league or something. And the game ends up tied, and they're going to a shootout. And like, my daughter's like, she's her dad's son. She has these high expectations for herself, And she's a D1 player, so she's a good hockey player. And I could see on the bench, I could visibly see, like, she did not want to take the shootout shot. And like I could feel it from the stands. I'm like, she's gonna melt down here. I don't know if she's gonna make it. And like, you could just see the breaths and the weight of it coming. And she's like third in line, and I don't remember how the scoring went, but she didn't end up scoring, and like, she was just devastated from that, and which was really hard to watch as a dad. And at the same time, you're going, like, you gotta, like, this is just the safest way for you to fail, right? Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons I love sports so much, is like the consequences, especially at the young age. Like, you remember your swimming, and I don't know how many times I struck out. It was a lot, but I don't remember any of them, right? And so that, you know, observing that and seeing that is like, okay, how as a dad am I going to respond to this? And so I'm like, I'm going to go to the lobby and wait for her there. And she came out and just melted down. And so, you know, I think it, as a dad, to be able to just be there for her, was pretty cool.
Yeah, right. It's that's the funny part when you say just be there. Because when I was telling my story, also I remember I was like, no one told me anything that fixed it, right? Like, they just were like, "What's up, G? Like, it's gonna be okay." But yeah, let it out, like, you know. And I think so many of us think we have to solve someone's problem when they're in the moment of a failure. In reality, it's like, no, the bad stuff already happened. Like, exactly. No solving needs to happen in the moment. Just let them sit in it, let them process it. Unless you nuke a server, and then you probably got to fix that right away. But so, I mean, I think what I'm most impressed with is you seem to walk a really good balance, at least in what you share in your baseball career, of walking the line of, hey, I experience frequent failures, but you obviously grew through that, not making it in your identity and just finding the enjoyment in it and not needing it to always be perfect. How have you seen that play out as you walked into either marriage, being a dad, or in your current business career? Like, where would you say you've seen it be the most beneficial?
Well, I just got divorced, so it's not okay. It's not in marriage. You know, I think, I don't know. I don't have it right for sure. I think the willingness to, like, recognize that I've got to learn and grow. On my mirror, I've got grow and give, and so that's the first thing that I look at in the morning. And like, I've always been just driven to, like, be better. And that can be a tall task sometimes. It's like exhausting. But and so I think in work, it's like, I'm going to try new things. And my career was, I took a lot of twists and turns, and I tried things that, I'm like, I really don't want to do this, but I'm at a point where I don't want to do what I was doing. And I have these aspirations of, you know, what I can contribute. Cause I always, like, the line to myself was, I don't want to be stuck on the wrong rung of the ladder. But I also don't want to go beyond where I'm supposed to be. And so I always kind of challenge myself and go, okay, well, if this is what you want, what are you going to have to do to get that experience and to grow from it? And, you know, so I went into technical sales. And so now as a sales guy, and I'm like, I've got to present, and like all things I didn't really want to do. But I found that, you know, just who I was and how I approached it was really comfortable. And I really enjoyed doing it, and it created opportunities to work with tons of amazing clients and to learn from what they're doing and just get amazing experiences. And that wouldn't have happened if I didn't take a bit of a risk and do something that I didn't want to do. And so there was growth in that. And, you know, obviously places where I failed and I'm like, oh, we didn't win that piece of business. Those are pretty easy measures to see. And so I think it's just always been about learning and growing. And I think that came from my grandma was, she died at 104, I think it was. And like she was like up to 100, she was reading books and always engaged in some learning. And so I think it kind of rubbed off from that.
I think some interesting you said. So you talk about always wanting to learn and grow, which I like. And I really liked your analogy on the rung on the ladder, right? But you said you don't want to go past where you're supposed to be. What does that mean in your head? Let's break that down a little bit.
Yeah, you know, I think that you know, I've never been particularly. I think it's a motivation thing. I didn't want to be motivated by the wrong things. We all need money to live, and you know, want to be paid what we're worth, right? And so I didn't want to like set an expectation that the measure of my success was going to be because I got a certain title and I was making that kind of money or I had a certain influence. Like I didn't want to be motivated by the wrong thing. I think that's really what was behind not being on the wrong rung of the ladder.
Okay. Have you ever caught yourself in that position?
I think it's easy to get caught up in and there's probably back to the comparison thing. Like you see what someone else is making, you see what, the consulting company's putting out. These are the pay scales around. You're like, I'm not making that. Right. And so those times it's easy to go, okay, well, am I in the right spot? Am I, I had to really balance out what, and be honest with myself. I mean, I stayed at a company for 20 years, which is pretty unusual right now. But I was true to myself in that I wanted to learn and grow. And I said, as long as I'm getting those opportunities, I'm not going to leave. And when they kind of came to an end, then I'm like, all right, it's time to go on and, try something different.
So with always wanting to learn and grow, I think we're in a very interesting place. I haven't been able to be with a guest yet on a podcast. Is you're in the middle of trying to grow something, right? Which obviously is going to have a lot of opportunities for learning and missteps along the way, right? Any specifics that stick out to you right now that you're like, hey, I can't believe, or I'm surprised I didn't know this and I learned it, or hey, I stepped in a cow pie there. That was not fun. Here we are.
Well, yeah, you know, I think, the last few years have been challenging ones for me, really, with a couple of getting fired twice. I don't like to, I'm still getting comfortable with saying that word, but, I just can't got to the point where I'm like, okay, I want to, like, I know what I want to do now, and really taking that opportunity. And so, yeah, I think the things that I'm learning are, you know, it's kind of along the same line of my career transition. I'm like just checking in and going like, does this feel right? Does this feel authentic? And giving myself permission that like, that's part of the process. And so when I actually just posted something out on LinkedIn today, that was, you know, trying to articulate some of what I learned during my career journeys. And, you know, I think, you know, you get these outside influences that say, this is how you're supposed to go about doing it. Like you need to have this many meetings. You need to know what size company you need to sell, what industry. And like, I remember being in that spot and going, well, I don't know what that is. I know I'm skilled and talented and, I've got to imagine that that's desirable somewhere. I didn't know where that was. And so, you know, just being for me, it took me 2 or 3 months of in that transition of a lot of failure and going, this isn't how I want to do it. It's the same thing. Like it's just kind of a continuation in this new opportunity where I'm like, I know I'm not going to get it right out of the gate. And, you know, I think the thing I'm learning is, I've taken what I have out to the market and said, Tell me what's wrong with it and, you know, what would make it better. And so, you know, creating that opportunity to be wrong and doing it with people that are generous has been, I think that's been the biggest learning. And, you know, I think that the outcomes are, will speak for themselves. But, you know, when you get that kind of when you have an hypothesis, an idea that you want to test, and you bring it and, you know, take, being willing to take the feedback, it's pretty powerful.
Yeah, it's interesting. If someone listens back to what you just spoke about, you talked about, in my, the way I'd word it, too many voices with too many opinions, but also needing to take your thoughts and ideas to the right voices to get the right opinions, right? So it's not about not getting opinions or voices. It's about figuring out who to take them from. I think it's so important, because I was, last week I was sitting with my counselor and I was telling her, I said, man, there's so many opinions. If you really look at your life and where you got to where you are, there's so many opinions that like formulate that, right? And so many paths that in my own business career I chose not to take because business mentors were like, hey, this is dumb and this is the first division that we fire and you should do this and not do that. And you look at it, you're like, man, just it's so loud. It's just so much. But then there's a post today that a guy Morning Brew, if you've heard of that. So he posted today, he goes, I've never met a successful startup that had a business plan. He goes, no joke. He goes, I've met a lot of them. Like, I know I'm young because he's under 30, I think, actually, or just at 30. And he goes, but I've met a lot because of his newsletter. And he goes, it's not a formula. Everyone wants to make it a formula. And I think it's easy to have an opinion when it's a formula. It's hard to have an opinion when you've actually experienced it. And, like, that's where you're talking. You're going to people who have actually been there and, like, hey, you would actually use this, or you've actually used something like this. What do you think?
Yeah. Oh, I don't mind some of the other perspectives as well. I think there's just as much value in that, in the perspectives that are the noisy ones, because there's some truth to it, right? And so, but I think the key for me has been going, is that going to work for me? And so I listen and I love hearing other people's stories and not out of judgment, but rather like, is it something that I like, is there something valid there for me to take away? And, you know, the things that just feel not right to me, I'm like, I just don't need to take that on.
Yeah. So it's interesting. So you love a lot of voices. So what advice would you give someone who goes, hey, because I would say I still disagree with what you're saying, because a lot of people get thrown to and fro from all the voices, right? And I think it's important to hear naysayers or devil's advocate or someone who thinks differently is important. But I think you also need to choose who you hear that from, especially someone who is under 50, right? That's growing in it. So what would you say to them? Because while I agree the different voice is important, I think too much of it is just asking for a failure.
Yeah, I suppose there you can get, if you're that influenced, then I think maybe it's I don't know, that's just an opportunity for failure and growth, I suppose. But boy, I don't know. I guess the question would be, what would my advice to my daughters be, right? I mean, they're of that age, and who do I think that they should listen to? And you know, the things that what I consistently have told my kids is, You want to surround yourself with people that are pro you, and if you can find that, those pro you people are gonna they're not always gonna tell you the thing you want to hear, but you trust them enough that you can take that in. And so I suppose it's just to what degree do you trust the voices?
Yeah, I like the pro you part, but you hit on the most important part. My true pro use don't tell me what I want to hear. They're like, hey, this is going to hurt, so sit down. You need to hear this and get ready for the next thing. So one area I want to touch on, because we've had a couple people come on and talk about this experience, but I think few have been open on internalizing how to get through it, and that's being fired, right? I mean, that is not a fun thing in any facet, much less experience it multiple times. What are you willing to share about the why and how you got through it, or advice you have for people?
Yeah. I think there was like just a kind of corrosion that happened for a lot of years. And as great as my experience was at Carlson, it was a business that every fall they had a layoff. And I always, like, I never really felt like that my number was going to be called. And, but still, like, the anxiety of it kind of, and only in retrospect did I see it, but the anxiety just kept kind of building and building. And so I had imagined, I'd catastrophized, you know, what was going to happen. And like, the world was going to come to an end. And so I, you know, I, when I left there, you know, I took a job with, I'd say I took a CIO job, and there's some ego involved in doing that, even though I knew I was qualified to do it. And, you know, I won't go into, you know, some of the details of around why, but it just was ended up after 3 years, it wasn't the right fit. Getting fired there was, in some ways it was a relief. But I also then had to reckon with, okay, like I'm the one that got fired here. What do I need to learn? Right. And like it probably took me a couple of weeks to go, okay, it's gonna be all right. And that wasn't the end of it, but like I was ready to kind of move forward after a bit of time. And like at that point, I'm an introvert, and so I'm like, I don't want to go out and network. I don't want to. I envisioned I had to go and inject myself into a circle of people. I'm like, that is the absolute last thing I want to do. But I knew that finding the next job was going to be through networking and connecting. And, you know, look back 2 years later, and I don't know how many, I've met hundreds of people, and it's a critical part of my life at this point, and it's part of my job. And so it took me, you know, those couple of weeks to get through that. And then, you know, it was 2-3 months of really checking in and going, is this how I want to do it? Like, is this, I want people to really know who I am and what I am about. And, you know, frankly, at the same time, it was, you know, I was going through a divorce, separation and a divorce, getting fired, going to counseling my own. And like, it was just like, felt like everything was coming down at once. And so the networking, connecting was like, it was some ways, it was probably a bit of a safe haven to like, just go, they didn't know me. Right. And I could, right. I could try different things on and not inauthentically try them on, but try them on to go, is that the way I want to show up here? And, like that was really important. And I figured out a lot about myself and, you know, have created a community out of that, you and I wouldn't have met had that not happened. Right. And so, you know, that was, the whole, like being in, I was in transition for 6 months, and like the first two, three months were hard. I began enjoying it and feeling like I was going about doing it in the way I wanted to. But there's always this undercurrent of stress, right? I had kids to put through college and you know, responsibilities. And so when I meet with people, I try to just normalize that. Yeah, it's a hard thing. And like, I don't know many people that are independently wealthy. Right. And so we've all got to work in order to, you know, do the things that we want. And, but there is a path through there that I think can be really rewarding and fulfilling. And, so then I, you know, find the next role and, you know, I'm like, okay, this is the one, it's the thing I want to do. And, wasn't able to move it as fast as I, as they wanted, as fast as I wanted, and decided to go a different direction. And that one was more shocking than the first one. But I was buoyed by the fact that I'd already, like I had created a network where like I knew that it was going to take me as much time to find the next thing. And so I leaned into those people and, you know, was out of work for, I think, 2 months, and a month of it was my own doing. I'm like, I just want to enjoy the summer. But yeah, so it's a definitely a blow. And, you know, I can see that in people when I meet them. And, you know, I don't want to sugarcoat it. I want to normalize that. Yeah, it's a hard situation, but there is a path through it.
I love the network piece, because I think people undermine don't understand the network's more about friendships and leaning on each other than it is about doing business. Like, that'll just happen organically. One thing I want to track for ask this question is it won't make sense. But so from Carlson to the first one, that was a choice leave, right? And then, okay. So it's interesting. You talked about how a little bit of ego comes with the CIO role. And the only reason I bring it up is I think I had my own kind of epiphany in this moment. So I was like, hey, I'd be curious. So when I left my old firm and went to Dell, my pivot, what I told myself was like, hey, you know, I'm really good at this stuff. I just want to make sure I'm as good as I think I am. But I think really what the pivot was, hey, I'm here, but I need validation that I am as great as I think I am. So I took a role where, sure, I'm good at the work, but culturally, it's just like, culture-wise, it's like, well, Devin, you could depict a more polar opposite pool to hang out in, right? And so it's interesting when you look for roles, sure, you can fit it, but don't take it because you're looking for a validation or that boost. Rather, take it because you love doing it. Yeah. And I think it's so easy to, whether you want to talk about the paycheck or the title or the opportunity, to allow everything outside of you to influence you and come up with an internal lie. Right. And it sounds like not exactly, but something you may have experienced when you took your shift to the CIO role.
Yeah, I think that was a, you know, it was an interesting time because, you know, I was part of the team that was selling the business. And so I'm like, you know, it's like, that's like the next chapter of this is going to be kind of rebuilding. And I felt like it, after 20 years, I'd kind of gone through that full spectrum. I'm like, it's just time to go. And so I was kind of passively looking, and then the opportunity came. And of course you convince yourself that it's the right thing. Right. And, you know, I think there was, I don't know. I mean, I think it certainly was ego. I don't know that there was particularly a craving for validation. I mean, if there was, it was my own validation versus it being from someone else.
Yeah. No, it's, I would say it's interesting when you look at those aspects of it. But in all of your experiences between sports and seeing what people are living through today and going through your own transitions, I think we can pick up what Em and I talk about in our first episode, a lot of formulas or what is also a fallacy to solve said problem. Right now, is there a really common one you're seeing or that you even tried throughout that kind of 2 years of ups and downs that you're like, hey, just don't agree for me personally? Like maybe the world does, but
yeah, I don't know that, like you said, like we said, I don't know that there's a formula to a lot of these things. And like, I'm a human just like everyone else. Like, what's the easy path through here? I mean, is life have to be this difficult sometimes? And like, just tell me what I need to do and that'll fix it. I don't know. I'm right now very much focused on just trying to be curious and yeah, check in and go like, is this actually Benji that's showing up? And you know, I'm still sorting through that, but you know, I think the curiosity is, that's what I try to encourage and live that, to be able to kind of get through all of it. But I don't know, so that's my formula.
Yeah, well, a kind of fallacy that pops into my brain when we're talking, I feel like if you look at you and I, similarities, you know, motivated, hardworking, like to challenge, like to learn. I love other people's opinions. I'm like, the more you can challenge my thinking and prove me I'm wrong, the better, because then I'm actually learning something. But I would say when you look at us from more of a personality standpoint, you talk about you're more of an introvert, I'm more of an extrovert. I feel like you're a little bit better than me probably at thinking through things before you act. I'm more of like, hey, we know 20%, let's go, right? Like, let's hit it. But a fallacy inside of that, I think also then people pigeonhole us in certain job types, in certain positions. And so I'd be curious, or certain networking roles, right? Any feedback for introverts directly from introverts' mouth? Because I super disagree that introverts aren't good at sales. Disagree. Aren't good at networking. Disagree. I think your biggest extroverts, me, I also need plenty of time, or just leave me alone and let me go in my shell. So any you know, kind of feedback for that type of thing out there?
Yeah, I mean, I think I had lived into those fallacies, and, you know, I got to a point where, Like I had these expectations for myself and I had the expectations for the relationships around me. And when they weren't going the way that I wanted to, I'm like, all right, I'm just going to sever those ties. And I think it got to a place of isolation under the name of I'm an introvert and I need my time and space to myself. And so, yeah, there's a fallacy. There's tons of fallacy around that. And like I do get energized through having these kind of conversations on a one-on-one basis. And I, you know, my networking is a thing that I do, and I don't call it networking. I call it connecting, but it very intentionally for that point, right? It's that like there is something in me, even though I'm an introvert, of being able to have that mental stimulation and having different conversations and versus just going, yeah, I'm an introvert that like I've got my two friends and I don't need to talk to anyone else.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's too often we let the formulas decide who we are, right? Versus from what I'm picking up from you, a lot of it was like, no, I'm going to decide. I may use a formula to try and get through something easier, but it's not going to place me in my spot in society, which I think easier when you're younger, a lot better as you get older, not to allow that to happen. But with that, I mean, as we're getting towards the end, any epic failures we missed that you're like, hey, we should really chit-chat about this one?
Boy, I think we hit the big ones. I'm sure there's failures in there that I've missed. I mean, it happens daily, right? And you're like, oh, okay, what am I gonna learn from that? And you know, it sucks when you keep learning the same lessons too, right?
Yeah, you're like, oh, is this on repeat? You're like Groundhog Day, round 24. No, but yeah, it happens daily, right? And it's, I think we need to be open to allowing it. I mean, right in the moment for me, I mean, to me, someone's probably watching going, how dumb is it you didn't connect that? Hey, you took a role for like, you know, somewhat the wrong reason. And, but I just, again, that's the whole point of this story. Like, be open about it, have those conversations. But I think you came in from a really interesting angle. We've talked about sports and your grit and grind to keep going, but also needing to learn kind of, hey, it's time to hang it up and pick a new path. But then through that, a long track record. I mean, 20 years in one place shows you're really good at what you do. Others say kind of like, you know, kick you out the door. And then you hit, you know, road bumps and some heavy ones. Any challenges for, is it the athletes? Is it the introverts? Is it those going through the road bumps? What are we going to leave them with?
Oh boy. Yeah, I guess to me, it's just learning and growing. Like, I think those are, that requires you to, recognize that failures are going to happen, right? And whether you want to call them fail, like I tell one of my least favorite phrases is let's fail fast. And that's a kind of comes with that technology. And I'm like, it's such a terrible way to put it. To me, what we want to encourage is learning fast, right? And so I think to me, it's learning and like recognizing you can be better, and that you're. But it's always going to be full of failure, and so the learning and growth is. That's what I'd leave people with.
Inside of the learning, if I can push a little bit, because I think you're really good at it. Is it? If you had to pick a direction, would you tell them, "Let's get advice. You know, go out there and seek contrarian thinking through talking to people. Is it reading a book? Is it taking time to reflect after failure? If you just had to pick one, what's the path you would have them go down?
Well, I mean, for me, it would be pretty personal to, like give myself a little bit of grace, right? That, like you don't have to be perfect. You can, and that's probably the hardest thing for me is to feel like I've let myself down. And, I imagine there's other tons of people that are just like that. But in the moment it feels like, man, am I the only one that can't figure this out?
Yeah.
So yeah, I would say giving yourself some grace.
Yeah, I like that. It's while you're self reflecting on your failure, don't get clouded by the overly judging yourself, which is easy. And it's like, hey, no, we, I mean, one of my buddies was like, did you start the podcast because you like mess up a lot and you want to feel alone? I was like, absolutely. I was like, man, I was like, no one wants to talk about it. I do, because I'm like, I'd be learning, you know, on repeat, and some I learn right away and never make the same mistake, right? But, well, I appreciate you jumping on, being open, really sharing your thoughts. I know we get feedback all the time from people of like, amazing episode. You know, I went through this, haven't talked to him about it recently, so it's nice to have people like you come on and be open about it. So.
Yeah, glad to be here, and thank you.
Yeah, awesome. Well, till next time, go do some internal reflection, but don't get all clouded with the judgment on yourself.
Took quite a fall, didn't we, Master Bruce?
And why do we fall, Bruce? So we can learn to pick ourselves up.